let's get started.
Okay, if people could refresh their pages, since I only posted the agenda a few minutes before the call start time. So please.
Okay. So let's see. So we're called to order. I think we have the roll call already. Peter, you've got updated who's here and so forth. So let's see. So item three, the key discussion, I think the do we want to update our critical task at hand? So we've got the new focus areas on ontology-based standards and big data.
Yeah. So we did discuss these, in the past couple strategy and tactics meetings, we never incorporated them into the critical task list. So I'm moving that we somehow incorporate them.
Yeah.
Not that it's anything new, but just put it down there. So
I'm trying to think of where to do that. So one option being one, in terms of, you know, certainly things like EarthCube and some of the other big data things. You know,
right.
That's engaging the other communities there.
Right, right. There's such as. I mean, we could do such as
right.
things.
Right.
Yeah, such as earth science and research data or something.
Right, the research
have
data.
Specific.
RDA, right?
So you might want to, shall we say yes, and then we'll, maybe I'll craft something, we can review it at the next meeting so that we don't block the time.
That sounds good to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it primarily goes into one, which I think is probably appropriate in terms of priority as well.
Or unless if someone can craft up something real fast, should we? So I think this is more than just engage the communities and get their content. I would think strategically we almost have to even do more than that. Maybe developing reference practice, a whole life cycle, and maybe some technology that's involved so that we have an OOR augmented something. OOR augmented application. So this is more than item one we have.
And I think we're also potentially looking at being funded participants in some of these efforts as well.
But I missed the last part.
Oh, I think we're also looking at being funded participants in some of these efforts as well.
Oh.
That was part of the plan for Earth.
Hope.
And certainly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's also a broader question here, which is in talking about, you know, supporting ontology-based standards and so on, there's really two aspects to what may or may not be done or need to be done, which is the syntactical and the semantic. So a lot of the conversations about ontology interoperation and about ontology-based standards and so on seem to focus, or certainly from my perspective, look as though they focus on more syntactical issues and APIs and, you know, the architectural questions and so on. Separate from that is the whole area of actual shared semantics, you know, how the meaning of a concept in one standard may or may not relate to the meaning of the concept in another standard. And there are techniques for that. John Sower presented his ISS thing a couple of years ago using this lattice of concepts and so on. Now, I don't know whether OOR should be doing that or not. OMG, I don't see them doing it. It's a thing which can be done. We need to say, are we doing it or not doing it, i.e., looking at semantic interoperability across standards.
I think OOR should be doing it from the perspective of OOR, meaning to say if there are ontologies developed for standards, then we want them to be, we want OOR to be the go-to place to get those ontologies.
Right.
And when we develop the practice and the technology that facilitates that OR augmentation or facilitates OR being the go-to place. Given to understand, though, that OR does not mean the instance that we are running, but OR being the logical single place that everybody is federated together on.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
I guess my question is, are they federated syntactically or semantically?
Both, I think.
Ah, that would be good.
I mean, maybe it's phased, but at least eventually, I mean, it will definitely be semantically as well.
Good.
It has to be. Otherwise,
somebody
will disappear.
Exactly. Somebody needs to be doing that. And if not us, then who?
Right, exactly. Yes.
So, did I recall some interest earlier in OMG standing up an OR instance for some of its ontologies?
I don't hear that. But OR standing up some repository was part of the plan, and at one point I did explain to Elisa that, I mean, that's totally consistent with what we are trying to do as long as we collaborate on how to federate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's no conflict in that. I mean, they run their repository, we run our own, but let's make sure we all federate with one another, and there will be, at the end of the day, a single go-to logical place.
Right. You're thinking, like, well, one for standards or one in general for...
I mean, the logically is one in general. Obviously, it's further partitioned by domain, by whatever.
Right.
But OOR should be sort of the go-to place.
Okay.
Well, after you go to OOR, it probably branches off to BioPortal. I mean, if it's biomedical, to standards related stuff, to earth science related stuff, to whatever, to
right.
Search data and so on, hopefully.
Right. I mean, that might be an interesting topic for your lunch if you have a little extra time. I mean, the other option would be sort of a standards instance, or it could just go in the main.
The instance is fine. I mean, there definitely will be multiple instances of OOR, but at the end of the day, I mean, still one logical federated OOR being the go-to place.
Right. Yep. I was just thinking about specifically in the standards space, if organizations wanted to maintain their own and then federate that is a good strategy.
Right.
And they could federate to if there's enough interest, we could have a federated instance for standards that then in turn gets federated itself into OOR itself.
So,
main instances.
So, but are you talking about still the ontologies side of the standards, or or are you alluding to, let's say, a repository of standards?
Think of ontology parts of the standards specifically.
So maybe where do we add the critical task then? Maybe somewhere between. Maybe we replace number two with this. So, I mean, this is much more down to earth now.
Yeah,
using maybe part of some of the words I already have or tweaking those. I mean, developing reference practices, developing the technology to support all our augmented applications, such as some domains in big data or ontology-based standards or something like that.
Yeah, I think maybe I would, I wouldn't completely drop the text from two, because I think I would say something like compelling and relevant reference implementations and use cases of OOR.
Can can we defer that to you? I mean, to on sort of getting the language right for us? If you spend maybe 10-15 minutes right after this meeting, we'll try to finish up early.
I'm sorry, was that for me or for Ken?
No, for you, Mike.
Me.
Would that be okay?
Yeah, I think so.
Ah, okay. Good. So I would say action, Mike will try to insert this into the critical task list.
Okay. Yeah, I think identifying some specific targets there makes sense as well.
Okay, I put that on the chat.
All right. Okay. Let's see, should we go into announcements and reports?
Sure.
Do you want to talk about Ontology Summit 2013?
Okay, if nobody else wants to go first, sure. Ontology Summit 2013, there has been one meeting so far, but a lot of sort of background email exchanges between the heads of the six co-organizers. And as decided last year, the new IAOA president will by default be one of the co-chairs. So Michael Gruninger, who's taking over the presidency of IAOA starting January 1, would by default be one of the co-chairs. We still need to identify another general co-chair, and then two co-chairs for the symposium, and various track champions and two co-lead editors. So that's sort of the template we're still working towards. There were a whole bunch of discussion, and looks like it's boiling down to sort of slightly more of an introspection. One of the things that we recognize is even if opportunities are opening up like big data, or even if funding is available, the ontology practice is not totally in place. We can't walk in and tell people this is the kind of things you can just move ahead with. So, I mean, I guess the case in point is the Earth Science ontology mini-series, whereby the fifth session was supposedly a tutorial session, and if we had like reference implementations or a book of knowledge, body of knowledge, or a standard practice or standard reference practice, then we could just say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, this is generally how you would go, or these are three templates or three patterns that 90% of the people would go into. We don't have that for the ontology practice or the ontology-driven applications practice. So this is probably the main theme for this coming summit, to prepare us to get us hopefully a lot more ready for big time than we are now. And of course, there's still that's almost sort of falls into what I was talking about earlier in terms of developing reference practice. But of course, in the OOR perspective, it's the developing reference practice where OOR is a key component. But for the rest of the community, probably they could be addressing other components as well. Michael and Fabian and Leo are all in favor of cleaning up the act on ontology development methodologies, as well as metrics for ontology evaluation. I mean, namely, I mean, what is a good ontology type of a thing. If that is coupled to the real use case scenarios, such as big data or tackling research data, tackling ontology-based providing more value in ontology-based standards, tackling earth sciences, and so on. I mean, that would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like, I mean, that will be it, but obviously a lot of it is community driven. And so three key dates have been identified. The Thursday, December the 13th, that would be, I mean, this is the same practice. I mean, same process we've been going through before. So we'll have a pre-launch brainstorm session with the whole community whereby some of the final decisions are made in terms of themes, in terms of maybe track, not decision, but in final inputs are made and deliberated on the 13th. And then the day right after that, of course, during that day, we also try to identify who would be the volunteers. So the next day, we'll have the first organizing committee meeting, because past that, it's getting too close to the holidays. And then we come back maybe early part of January, give ourselves another week, possibly another organizing committee meeting. Not quite sure yet, but then we also identify the launch events to be mid-January on January 17th. So we have three key dates locked in. That's why I was expressing a somewhat regret that the OMG meeting is that week, and we might lose key people whom we really would have wanted to engage. People like Mike Bennett here and Elisa Kendall.
Mm-hmm. I can think of a number of connections. You know, there's a semantic geospatial body of knowledge that's being developed by somebody in New York, and there's been an ongoing ontology evaluation workshop at ISWC.
Wow, beautiful. Could you mark your calendar and make sure you can join us on the 13th?
I could try,
And the 14th, I mean, join us in the organizing committee. Your input is definitely highly valued. Everyone here, I mean,
right.
Ken, Mike Bennett. So please, I know 13 would be a challenge for Mike Bennett, for sure. Would you be able to join on the 14th, or are you flying that day?
I'm not flying. The 14th, there's a meeting I sort of have to be in and out of during the day, Pacific time, and I'm already filling up with people wanting to need to sneak out and do conference calls throughout that time. I'm free in the afternoon of the 14th after 1 o'clock. Wide open.
But our meeting is quite early.
Ah.
8 a.m.
I think I've already given that slot away. Let me see. That's 11 Eastern. No, I have a conference call 8 till 9 that I can't get out of. Then a possible 9 o'clock.
Maybe, I mean, join us after your meeting is through or something. I mean, even I'm almost certain we won't be done by 9.
Oh, good.
I'm guessing, I mean, but that is a good guess. I mean, you know the organizing committee, especially because this is the first meeting. It's not going to finish in an hour. And even if you won't be able to join the calls, give us some indication that you'll be on the team. I mean, of course, there will be circulations of announcements and stuff, asking for feedback, asking for all sorts of things. Then make sure you respond to those so that we have you on the roster.
Yep, absolutely.
Everyone here, Ken, Mike, Dean, as well. So I think, I mean, this folds in quite well into what we need to do, and I guess in general folds into the whole notion. Maybe I'm just paranoid, but I keep thinking that we are getting, I mean, we meaning ontology is getting, especially formal ontology, is getting more and more irrelevant. It shouldn't be the case, but I think we haven't demonstrated our value clearly enough, and in the last two summits, while we document, we write very a very nice and compelling piece, we don't have the actual work to show quite yet. Maybe this year we could do it. Maybe the besides the theoretical track, then we can have like domain driven application tracks that develops the reference practices, or they develop some of the technology. There were, I mean, if we retrospect on back to the previous like post-mortem sessions, I mean, there have been suggestions of doing hackathon type things, like, I mean, hackathon / full camp type things.
Right.
Because, I mean, there's also a clear indication that we should no longer carve out the bulk of the symposium to wordsmithing the communique. So there's a good likelihood that the communique will be done by the symposium, and the symposium will continue. On things that you really need face to face on, like hackathon type things, or demo of good practices and so on.
Right.
So which will make it a lot more interesting too.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, a couple very quick comments. I mean, one of my colleagues commented at our meeting last week that there was less, really, you know, almost zero in presentations on reasoning at Semtech last year. And I hadn't quite, you know, I kind of went back, you know, thinking myself, and I think in total he was actually right. You know, certainly, big data, I'm sorry, linked data is, you know, ascendant at Semtech. And, you know, even at ISWC, I would say half the papers were linked data related. And although there were two good OWL OWL tracks, and there was actually a new this year, which, you know, had some kind of inconsistencies, I think, between the PCs and submitters in terms of what was expected, but was they actually had essentially a formal evaluation track where people were, you know, really actually doing essentially quantitative experimentations, you know, on different tool sets and things. I think that's a welcome addition. You know, I think that's certainly happens in a number of the other, you know, fields that are more established. So, you know, thinking about trying to get submissions, you know, heading toward that, and really just more things out there for the in general for the for things like Semtech, you know, getting presentations out there, I think is a getting submissions into those, I think is important step.
Yeah, and there was, I mean, during the meeting, a definite mentioning. I mean, it was George Drawn who says, I mean, now government funding is there, but the ontology community is just very underrepresented. I mean, you guys aren't even coming to ask for funding.
I have to go.
Since Frank's not there.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
Oh, bye, Mike. Oh, he's gone. But that's one comment. The other comment is, I mean, in big data, people seem to be very impressed and very happy with statistical methods. And as you say, I mean, reasoning doesn't even come to the picture much at all.
I think we need to kind of make our case for relevance. And to be honest, you know, there have been big data panels at Semtech and at ISWC. And ISWC. And the walking out of those, I mean, there wasn't, you know, I was kind of underwhelmed. I enjoyed Mike Stonebreaker's talk, since I hadn't heard him before, and his rave that, commercial databases are all 30, well, 30 years behind the times anyway, that you really need to be looking at column stores and things like that. But there wasn't as compelling a, I think people still view it as a big opportunity, but don't necessarily have a lot of the specifics to kind of back it up, other than using, some of the, certainly, using the cloud basically as more scalable analytics and storage for the for linked data itself. And, they're viewing linked data cloud itself as a big data source. But clearly we want to go beyond that. So I think better articulation, and I know that was, a lot of the issue, a lot of the topic of last year's summit, and maybe just making that more visible, as part of the process as well.
If you look at that, Big Data A to Z.
I saw that. Yes.
Discussion.
Right.
Where they.
What did they use S for S?
Even linked data doesn't appear there. I mean, it's.
Right.
It's really low level stuff that they talk about in that A to Z.
But essentially, I mean, that's where the practitioners are, and the linked data and the formal ontologies are they are all in the ivory tower.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the irony is that I invented MapReduce for ontologies.
Well, you have
to
make the case.
At this point, it's purely historical, not...
Right. We'll give you Ontology Summit 2013 to make the case and to correct the world on this. Please.
Not just
big data, but I mean, actually, I'm glad you mentioned this. One sentiment at the co-organizer meeting is that before we are ready, and if we step into big data and say we are the white knights, then that's just way too risky. That's why we reduce the summit theme to more of an introspect and getting us ready, cleaning up our own act, than going out and say we can bring you the solution maybe next year. That's why I'm totally comfortable, and I've felt that, I mean, this is definitely a very prudent thing to do, and I'm glad, Mike, you share that sentiment too. Yeah.
Yesterday I had a meeting with people at the W3C.
Great.
I'd like to hear about that. I can also report on the SOCOP workshop a bit.
Good.
But
please document whatever you're reporting on to the chat. Otherwise, we'll lose a lot of the details.
Okay.
Okay, Ken.
You want to talk about the WCC folks?
Yeah,
I met with Yvonne Herman. Is that one M or two, N or two?
One N. Yeah.
Okay.
Is a semantic web activity lead.
Right. And Eric Goodholm?
Oh, yes.
And I think there's an apostrophe in his name?
Yes.
So I'm guessing that's the spelling.
There's E-A-U-X.
E-A-U-X.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like that? No, I'm still not doing it right. H. Oh, can you spell it? I don't.
Yeah.
I just have the pronunciation.
Right. I should have it on my address book.
Anyway.
I think that's very close, but I'll confirm it.
I Sorry, I just don't know the spelling offhand. But anyway, the issue we were talking about was about OData. And the relationship with the semantic web. And so we, you know, there were discussions between them and the Microsoft people about OData years ago.
How many years ago?
Two years ago.
Yeah, okay.
And they did not lead to anything.
W3C tends to be kind of leery about taking something that's from other organizations. I mean, even I think WSDL had this problem. And they certainly aren't, and it sounds like that isn't the process here, but they certainly aren't an organization to rubber stamp something somebody else did.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so
it's much more self-service and less coordinated than the, curated, maybe, than the W3C process is.
Right. So anyway, we talked about it. And at this point, I mean, the OData TC is really very eager, actually, to have better connections with semantic web and ontologies. And they, in a couple of ways. One of them is to have an RDF format as one of your possibilities. So you can have Atom or JSON or RDF.
Okay.
And that's actually fairly straightforward. I don't think it'd be really hard to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to their RDB to RDF kind of effort.
Okay.
The only kind of sticky point is, what if you're feeding RDF in as opposed to getting RDF out? Might be a little harder to push RDF into a relational database.
Well, I think this would be RDF conforming to a specific vocabulary, right?
Presumably, yeah.
Okay.
The only thing, there was some issue about, I think there's some issue concerning blank nodes, how one would handle those. But they seem to feel that was doable.
Okay.
Then, and then, of course, at the T-box level, there's types. And as it happens in OData, one can have either closed or open types. And open types fits quite well with semantic web and RDF. Because
Are the closed types closed similar to XML schema data types? Or?
Oh, no, these are types in the sense of entity types. So they're like classes.
Oh, I see. Not data types.
Not data types, no. Classes.
Okay.
So you really do need an open class notion
right, to
be fully compatible with a semantic web.
Uh-huh.
And they have it.
Okay.
Although they'd also have closed types. And again, they felt that was perfectly okay. Even having closed types is fine, because in practice, when you do a query on an RDF store, it's going to be closed. I mean, you can't say anything that isn't in the store.
So, is this closed by the standard, or this is closed by a specific OData instance or implementation?
It's closed. You actually specify in your schema whether it's open or closed.
I see. Okay.
So then I said, okay, that's nice. And then there's the issue that, of course, each source, data source, is going to have its own schema, the SDL schema. So, well, that that doesn't fit with the semantic web. I said, yeah, that's true, but there's a distinction between the entity type and the entity set. So by making that distinction, and you can have any number of entity sets, so you have an entity set at each source, and they could all share the same entity type. That opens the possibility of those entity types coming from an ontology. And that you can have the same entity type used in many different data sources.
Mm-hmm.
Now that really starts to sound like semantic web.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they like that. And so their suggestion was to start a W3C community.
Okay.
Experimental one of those, something that ends with an X or a real.
Let me give you
group.
The community is a new concept.
Oh, it's not the X thing.
I'll give you the link now.
I think they have stopped during the incubator groups, which are the X things. I'm not completely sure about that.
Mm.
And I'm not quite sure I understand the difference. Well, I do. There are interest groups and community groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in particular the community group is somewhat more open to non-members, although the interest groups have been as well.
Well, no, I've got a link for it right now. So go to that link.
Okay. Good. I think I've read this, but...
Okay, call me.
Anyone may participate. No membership is required. No charter is required, just a short scope statement.
Okay.
And it requires a minimum of 5 participants.
Okay.
Communication is publicly visible, self-determined, no time limit.
Mm-hmm.
IPR balanced. And there is a requirement that anything you create, I guess, must be royalty-free, so I think that's pretty reasonable, too. I mean, anything you do within this community group cannot then be claimed as intellectual property by a member of the community.
Right. Now, does this also mean you have to declare IPR coming in and...
Right. If anything comes in that has IPR constraints, you're going to have to...
Basically,
say that this is going to be royalty free. So I don't know. I mean, some people might not want to join as a result of that, but if we can get 5 people to join, so I can certainly start it. I can share that, but then we have to get 4 other people, and they seem to feel they. Wouldn't be too hard to get 4 other people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was going to bring it up at the OData meeting this week, see what their take is on it. I'm pretty sure they would be happy with it. All that's left is to come up with a nice name for it and that scope statement.
Mm-hmm.
And the community group will essentially be OData related or OData driven.
It's an OData driven group. But the OOR becomes an issue because the presumption is that the sources of these ontologies will have to be reliable. I mean, you can't have a service that depends on an ontology that's going to sit on somebody's laptop and that the person could change arbitrarily at any time. So obviously you need something a little bit more than that. And that's where the OR comes in. The OR would be the service that provides these common entity types. Does that sound like a reasonable way of looking at it?
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. Yes. Did you mention OR to the W3C people?
Yes.
What were their reactions?
They seemed positive about it. They didn't really have any great comment. They just seemed to feel that something like this was certainly necessary. But what it's actually going to be, I mean, we don't know. It would be basically an improvement on schema.org. Schema.org is basically just one ontology, and not even a very deep one.
So it looks like the difference between the interest groups and the community groups. Well, does the community group get any staff support, or... Excuse me.
Yes, they do. You want me to give you a link for that now?
No, it's I don't think it's critical. I think the
they provide minimal support. I mean, it's
But there is an intent that some of this work can become rec track at some point in a working group, right?
They do say that there is. You can transition to a standards track.
Right, right. So the thing that scares me a little bit is the IPR commitments and the contributor things, that they mostly want organizations to participate. And I think getting this through Raytheon Legal would be, at best, a big hassle. And at worst, kind of a nightmare. At least it doesn't cost anything.
Yes, I can definitely see that it would be tricky to get that through.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, I'm on this group and OData and would be on that one. So there's no problem in terms of communication.
Right. Right.
And all communications are publicly visible. Anybody can look at them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's actually true with most of the working groups as well. It's partly sort of, you know, do you get to be on the telecon and say, I think this is a bad idea then, or do you have to basically sort of wait till the comment periods when a change becomes a bigger deal and things like that.
Right.
So
I don't know. Can you participate in the telecom without being a member?
Only if you're invited by the chair, and then it would be kind of for a special presentation and things like that. It wouldn't be. And they've tightened the restrictions on both invited experts and also essentially being a proxy representative for another organization, which is a loophole I exploited to get under RIF. So I was actually a representative of SRI.
Right.
Although Lisa offered to do it too, so, mm-hmm.
There are some awkward things here, but...
Mm-hmm. No, but I think in general it actually seems like a good way of doing it, and I'm sure there'll be other folks that are less encumbered than I am.
Right. So anyway, we can get some people, and basically get the ball rolling in terms of maybe a white paper or something. So that would be good. I mean, but there's no direct support for this, just people chatting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's what's going on there. And
so, Ken?
I would like it to go quickly because the OData is moving really quickly. And if you want to get these hooks into the OData standard, you're going to have to do it really fast. So that's the only constraint here, is trying to get this feedback quickly.
Right, right. So one suggestion to kind of get better awareness of OData in the community is to submit an abstract for Semtech. I think abstracts are due in January with submissions pretty much at the conference. Yeah, this would just be slides, but I think that would actually help to raise awareness and maybe a little bit of fear and uncertainty and doubt, within the semantic web community.
Mm-hmm.
Not to give you more work, but I think it would actually be a good opportunity.
All right, so Semtech is coming up real soon, but yeah, I mean, in general, this should be done quickly.
Right. So the submission deadline for Semtech is usually early January, with the conference in June or so.
In June, well, by June, well, that would help to give some visibility to OData, but any feedback we'd get in June would be too late to include anything in the standard.
Okay. I think that would still be okay. I mean, you could basically reflect what is there.
It would just be a report on what's there.
And we come as friends, not as...
So that would just be for publicity. What I'm looking for right now is actual feedback about how we can actually get the integration between the semantic web and the OData standard.
Right.
Particularly that, like Eric felt that, you really want to make sure that one can use an OData endpoint essentially transparently as if it was part of the semantic web, part of linked open data at least.
Right. Well, I assume specifically he was thinking, there's a couple approaches. I mean, one is the linked data, but the other is actually being able to use it as a Sparkle endpoint.
Right. So, in other words, one could really use it just this one way without even being aware that it's an OData behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of his goal.
Mm-hmm. It's probably too late to get it in, but one thing that I could imagine is also having a Sparkle entailment regime for OData. Those are added in 1.1 that sort of tell how Sparkle will work with an OWL knowledge base or with a set of RIF rules, for instance. I've been involved in kind of running some of the test cases for RIF to make sure they have at least two implementations.
One thing about OData, and I guess this is a feature of RESTful systems in general, is that it gives URIs effectively some behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you do a get on this on a URI, it actually does something. So you don't usually think of a URI in terms of behavior, right? It's not like a procedure call.
Well, you certainly think of the get behavior, but you don't necessarily think about the others.
Well, no, because when you do a get, it can actually do something. Or, gets and posts and patches.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, these things can actually do things
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
as opposed to just being, identifiers.
Right.
And they, they do have a specific semantics associated with them. So one example that came up at the face-to-face meeting at the OData face-to-face was asynchronous operations where you do a get, it comes back with a 202, and it tells you a URI for a monitor. And you do a get on the monitor, and it gives you the status.
Hmm.
So there's a whole state chart associated with asynchronous operations
mm-hmm.
and URIs that occur within that state chart.
Hmm. Okay.
this really changes the picture of it. You know, now you or I have this behavioral, you know,
right,
meaning within a state chart.
Mm-hmm.
There's state.
Right.
So
I was actually looking at some of the more recent PERL mechanisms, persistent URL, at OCLC, PERL.org specifically. And they've got a kind of extended model now that at least covers other operations as well. So that might be worth taking a quick look at.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is more oriented toward essentially providing a symlink or controlled set of redirects on the web. But there might be some relationships there.
Yeah, that's really concerned with this redirect aspect.
Right, right.
But there are status codes associated with them.
Yeah, and they're leveraging more than they used to. I mean, I've been using Perl for my homepage since demo.org was starting to be archived. And so originally I directed it there, but left a link there that there are more recent versions can probably be found here. And just redirected it to my ISP homepage. BBN is somewhat weird and inconsistent about homepages. For employees, so. And I'm sure Raytheon is worse. So,
apparently, there's a relationship to the static web
with Perl.
Perl.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, Eric Miller did Perl at OCLC, before he came to be Semantic Web Activity lead, and then at Sephira, they've been basically updating the Perl mechanisms. So it's actually a really good idea. I mean, it particularly ties into ideas like master data management within an enterprise.
Yeah, it seems to be a bit of a convergence with OData.
Maybe.
Actually, it would be nice if we could coordinate the two. But
yeah, I think Eric Miller is probably the guy who's driving it most. You know Eric, right?
Eric?
Yeah. He was a Semantic Web Activity lead before Yvonne.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And came from OCLC and then founded Sephira after he left.
Mm-hmm.
So he's mostly kind of coming and I think currently working in the library world. But, well, it's sort of intersection of the semantic web and library world.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But right now my immediate problem is just to start this community.
Right.
I just wanted to mention that. But we've run out of time, I guess, right? Or an hour and a half meeting.
I guess we have. Yeah, I was just going to kind of comment that the for the...
That's about Earth Science.
Yeah, well, for
the
SOCOP workshop.
Oh.
Yeah.
So this was, in the past, basically, we've had sort of sets of presentations. We actually decided to make this a vocamp instead, and kind of continuing the work that was done in Santa Barbara and Dayton, and continuing one of the topics in this particular, which is the spatial trajectory that I led. And there's
could you paste the link off that so that I can capture that?
There's actually sort of two. Because there's the SOCOP workshop link, and then there's the vocamp link. They're linked together. So, and I somehow lost my chat window. Oh, there it is. It was another tab with, so let's see. So one thing I kind of noticed is that the only recent vocamps have been the geovocamps. So I actually really liked the idea of, you were thinking about doing a vocamp at the Intelligence Summit. I think that would maybe help to reinvigorate the vocamp series as well, which would be a good thing.
Is it dwindling? But I see vocamp popping up.
If you look at vocamp.org, almost all the recent ones have been the GeoVocamp.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's been a very active series. It would be nice to share some more groups, because the GeoVocamps are kind of all the same people. I should say subsets of the same people. And Christoph is planning on doing another one in Santa Barbara as well.
But that would be another GeoVocamp.
Yes. Right. So this is the VoCamp link itself.
Mm-hmm.
See, the here's a Stokop workshop. Yeah. Right. Trying to figure out which. Ah. Okay. Right. So there are four subject areas, and the one I was involved with was the continuation from work done the last couple that was working with spatial trajectories. And so one of the things that actually pleased me a lot was we got, I think in part because it was in D.C., some of what I call kind of the real ontologists who, hadn't really been involved very much with the SOCOP community in the past. So Amanda Wisdom came up. Mike Denny, who's now at MITRE, was there. I don't think he's really an ontologist, but the U.S. representative for Ontotext, who does the OIM triple, was there for one day. And somebody else, Doug Foxbug from NIST, was actually worked in a couple of the workshops. That I thought was really nice to have those as well. We've had folks like Christoph and Pascal Hitzler, were involved in Dayton, and certainly Christoph was involved in Santa Barbara as well. So it was kind of nice to see kind of the intersection and comparison from, more of the semantic web theorists and academics and, the ontologists that are out there kind of in the real world looking at modeling some of those things. And, with a little bit of a site connection since many of them are former cyclists as well. So overall, I think it went well. There is a little bit of an open question about where we want to post these ontologies with resolvable URIs. And so the OR makes sense as a repository, but doesn't necessarily give us the resolvable URI issue. So that was in particular kind of the immediate thing that, it had me looking at the Perls, a couple of days ago.
And question. How does BioPortal tackle this, and what is their approach or what is their strategy?
I think by and large they don't.
Is it kind of strange?
It is. Although I don't think that they have always necessarily focused as much on having on the resolvability of URIs.
But isn't one of the goals of the OR is to provide the persistent accessibility to these ontology resources?
That would certainly be certainly.
And I guess locking in a persistent URI is sort of the number one thing to do.
Well, in some sense, the OR IDs should be persistent as well, but essentially, in a sense that you do have, a unique URI for each page that's describing a class.
Right.
But you aren't necessarily publishing everything directly, particularly as RDF. at the base URI for the ontology.
Yeah, so sorry for interrupting your report, but this I think is important, and this probably needs to be front and center in our architecture.
I think that's right.
Or metadata discussion, so that this would be among one of the first things we need to sort of enhance on. I mean, if we were to continue to use the BioPortal code base, isn't it?
It's a highly desirable characteristic for the repository to actually be able to, you know, publish at the base URI. And I don't think BioPortal directly supports that at this point. I should probably poke around a little bit and make sure that that's true.
So, Ken, would you be kind enough to at least capture the gist of this onto the chat, and then more importantly onto future architecture and API discussions?
I think we've already had meetings where we discussed the differences between BioPortal and OOR. Is this something new that we haven't already discussed?
I don't think this has been seriously pointed out and recognized as one of the key things that we want OR to feature. Have we?
It's always been an issue that, you know, you want these reliable URLs. How is that different?
But it was never pointed out that BioPortal code base doesn't provide one.
I thought we had noticed that before. I must have missed it.
I don't think we pointed that out, nor do we have a solution. Because, I mean, maybe integrating with Perl is the solution. I don't know. I mean, Perl obviously never even crept into the conversation before.
So that's an interesting point. Yeah. Perl.
So one thought, I mean, was to put them on the SOCOP, in the SOCOP space as well.
Yes. SOCOP is running an OR instance, so definitely.
Well, there's the OR instance, but there's also the, and I think they will go there anyway, but not necessarily in the resolvable form. So an alternative was to put them on the SOCOP wiki. But, you know, again, there's, you know, it's more of, even as we move to Semantic and Wiki, it's more of an attachment kind of, rather than something that is sort of directly in web space and accessible. And so Semantic Central was a possibility. And, you know, the vocamp.org site itself has... you know, would be one place, but that, again, is kind of more of an attachment model rather than a publish on a web model.
Yeah, OOR should be that solution. Of all things.
Of all things, right, right.
But what exactly is Perl actually providing?
URLs.
Perl is really, is essentially symlinks in web space. So when I give out my home address, my home page as Perl.org net mdean, you had to put the net in when I signed up for it. Basically, you know, I was able to redirect it from the DAML website to my ISP home site, transparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's other ways you could do it.
Is there a single centralized site that provides the service?
Well, so Perl.org is one that's been around for a long time. There is a purlz.org, or I think that's more for downloading the software that's now running off of Perl.org. So a number of the new ontologies are actually using Perl.org as a base. So the Ferber stuff, for instance, and I've seen a couple others recently.
But it's a single site.
It's a single site, right.
It's not federated.
Right. Right.
That
I
could
know,
be a problem if you wanted to hide it behind a firewall.
I think you can download the Perl software yourself, and so you can have a local, and it's ideal for local use within an organization. And in particular, if you want to have a, you sort of have a master data management plan for a given data type, but that may move over time. You know, it's great to use for the URLs that point to those sorts of things, because you just basically point to the endpoint du jour for employees or for part numbers or for things like that. And if that, you know, changes to another system in the future, you just basically update the Perl and you don't have to think about changing the URIs.
Okay. No, it definitely sounds like it's the right way to go.
So Perl, maybe I should put this down here.
But, you know, I've participated in some of these discussions where the issue of this idea of having these reliable URLs, I didn't call them persistent, but and there have been discussions in the architecture and use case meetings about it with no real conclusion. Perl does look like a viable way to approach this for OOR.
Or developing our own symbolic link mechanism within OOR.
Although we just download the Perl software and incorporate it into OOR.
Then we'll have to make sure the IPRs are right, are compatible.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's an issue. But so it looks like a mechanism, at least, even if we don't use the site. So, yeah, that looks good.
Go ahead.
Mike, you have the most experience with Perl, so perhaps you could, you know, give an opinion about how effective this would be as a mechanism for OOR.
I haven't thought about them as much in terms of, you know, incorporating them into OOR, for instance. You know, our stuff would certainly would work, you know, with Perls being pointed to them, and you know, could be you know, if somebody thinks something might move at some point, or even the name of the OOR repository might change. You know, there was a little bit of discussion back and forth in SOCOP about that for a while.
Just to interrupt, I mean, not just this, but I mean, there's still, we need a lot more sophistication to handle this, but every time a version is updated, previous links break, right?
Well, you mean of an ontology?
Of an ontology, or a class within an ontology.
Most changes tend to be monotonic. So, I mean, the first thing on the semantic web has been, you know, an unresolved kind of issue forever. you know, there are things like prior version and things like that. And people talk about updating namespaces. But if you look at, say, the WPT recommendations, none of those namespaces have actually changed with subsequent versions. Because the argument has been basically that too many things would break. So they basically struggle to keep things monotonic, so the namespaces don't have to change.
But
the documents, of course, have different URIs. but the actual namespaces and the namespace documents, well, the actual namespaces for things like RDF and OWL and you know, the whole bunch of other things haven't actually changed.
But this is, if the if an ontology changes to a new version,
mm-hmm.
and you have a reference to you know, a resource in that ontology,
right?
It isn't necessarily the case. The semantics are the same, unless you have backward compatibility,
right?
So if you explicitly do not want backward compatibility during a change to a new version, then all of the URLs, all these URLs, URIs, they should all break because it's no longer the same semantics.
Yeah. It's a question of whether it's worth changing the semantics or and breaking things to do that.
Well, I mean, if you keep the original, you know, if you have a link to it, and the new version is different and isn't compatible with what you had before, you better have some way of notifying, you know, notification that this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this is good subject for another architecture and API meeting. We need to, if I may request, we need to plan some meetings anyway.
Right. I think it would be interesting to have a meeting concerning this issue.
Right.
With Pearl in particular mentioned as the focus of the meeting.
Yeah, I mean, you could imagine sort of using Pearls to kind of focus, you know, to point to the latest version. You know, it's mostly used... you know, essentially at the domain top level. But, you know, there may be ways to kind of drill down further as well, particularly with some of the new features of Perl.
I think Michael Gruninger in particular might be interested in this regarding modularity.
Uh-huh.
Would it be nice to appropriate to invite maybe Eric Miller to that meeting?
Maybe.
Tell us his thoughts first.
Funny, if you go to Pearl.org, which used to be the implementation, I guess it's still the download site for the software. It talks about Pearls in the wild and describes Pearl.org, the granddaddy of Pearl site hosted at OCLC. The second one listing is Pearl.bioontology.org, which is the community hosted, provided by NCBO.
Ah, really?
Curious.
Oh, so NCBO is actually using that as a mechanism.
Yes.
To augment what BioPortal is not providing.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Maybe we will just... Then maybe they've already done all that research work. We could just do it like they are doing it.
Could be. I mean, it's a little weird, actually. If you go to either Pearl.org or Pearl.bioontology.org, you get this.
I don't see Pearl.bioontology.org.
Yeah.
Somewhere. Can you paste the link?
Sure.
Let me try that.
You get this kind of very administrative-looking interface. But
you get the same interface as for Pearl.
Yes.
It's almost identical.
Yeah.
Let
me give you the link for the Pearls in the Wild as well. So it would be a little, I think you can actually use these, well, when I did it, I went through and I was able to actually search for Pearls and, let's see, search for a Pearl. But you have to sort of know, well, it's, maybe not. You have to kind of know what you're looking for, which is a little annoying. At least as an anonymous user. So this is not quite as helpful as I would like it. Once you actually know one, then you can, you know, see where it points to and things like that. So I'm not quite sure how to find out at this point where.
Yeah, well, maybe it'd be worthwhile asking the BioPortal people just what the relationship is between pearl.bioontology.org and BioPortal.
Right, right. So I know that I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Eric Miller?
No, another guy in the bio, Eric Newman, who's been very active in the bio space. And again, I think they were looking at pearls and specifically for sort of master data management applications. So, you know, where to go for the latest, for the most official use of a, I don't know, a GenBank identifier or a chem, you know, us, trying to remember what the chemical numbers are called, but, you know, for those sort of things, you know, that they could use as widely used, essentially, persistent identifiers for data.
Mm-hmm.
So I expect that may be the type of thing that they're doing, using this for as well.
Okay, time's almost running up.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that was. I think all those questions today were interesting. So that was.
And so maybe quickly onto next meetings. The 11th and the 18th. My worry is we're getting less and less enthusiasm on OOR as well. I mean, not just ontology or formal ontology or reasoning as a whole, but on OOR. Looking at the turnout of today's meeting. So two dates coming up, 11th or the 18th. 18th may already be too close to the holidays. So do we want on just one more meeting and call it a year?
I think that probably makes sense. Yeah.
Agree, Ken?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that sounds fine.
Okay, so we'll just do next Tuesday? Maybe we continue some of this discussion and also maybe do some more planning on events after the new year. And so I also want to schedule the first meeting in 2013, and I, for selfish reasons, I'm proposing the 15th, because I will be traveling and out of the country, not returning until the 9th.
Hmm.
So my proposal is the 15th. Would that be okay with?
That sounds good to me. Yeah.
Good to me.
Suggest certainly that we avoid that first week. Our school vacation kind of spills over until the till January 4th. So
okay with you too, Ken?
Sure.
Okay, so next two meetings. Yeah, we moved the meeting up by 1 hour to accommodate Europeans, and again, like last time, no European is showing up. So
yeah.
Let's address that in our next meeting. So December 11th and then January 15th.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay. Talk to you both then.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.